As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Harrington deal. Chris Henry joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
That's Memphis the Blues by Zach Ryan, Oklahoma's own Zach Ryan. Little Oklahoma music about Memphis as the Oklahoma-Memphis series moves to Memphis.
So you were there last night. You wrote a piece about it, which I've tweeted out, urge people to read. Boy, the beginning was just excruciating. That was just painful.
Yeah, I mean they were getting pretty decent looks, and they just couldn't hit anything.
Yeah,
they started 0-for-10, and it wasn't a case of like just being overwhelmed by the defense. Like they were getting to good stuff, and they couldn't hit anything. And what it felt like to me was like it almost felt like the team was like still seeing shadows from game one. Like they were so shook about what they were anticipating the defense being that they weren't even making shots that the defense wasn't bothering that much.
I mean, it pretty clearly, and I don't, they looked like they were in their heads. There's no question. I mean, you talked about it yesterday, that generally teams shoot worse against Oklahoma City, even on open threes.
Right.
And that's, most of those teams haven't been beaten by Oklahoma City the previous game by 51. So
right.
I totally looked like they were, in hockey, you'd say gripping their stick a little bit, that they were tight. And then, honestly, in the second quarter, like I wondered whether they were gonna, be competitive. Like at some point, Ja was settling for threes, and then the way you described it in your column, I think, was anytime they either, even off of a miss or off of a turnover, it's like they instantly transport to the end of the court and put it in the hoop. Like it's crazy how explosive they are.
Yeah, and that was really the difference in the game. It's just how quickly they convert, how good they are at forcing the stuff, and how quickly they convert off of what they force. Like there was a play in the fourth quarter where Desmond Bane like reached out and plucked the ball from a Thunder guard and took it all the way, for a layup. And you thought, oh, the Grizzlies could do that too. Like they're allowed to do that. It hasn't been happening. It's been a two way street, really, where the Thunder have been forcing turnovers and converting off them, and the Grizzlies have it. And that game was won by the Thunder on that kind of stuff, on the turnover differential, on the rebounding differential. It wasn't the missing making shots. That's not what wasn't the difference in that game. It was beating them on the margins and beating them with, you can call it tenacity, you can call it athleticism, whether it's talent or whether it's play. It's the two things together. It's that they have this wave of tenacious defenders and athletes and that are playing on a string, and like it just never stops.
Yeah, it's an interesting where those things intersect. Like there was some lack of tenacity at various points, particularly I thought in the second quarter, where it felt like the Grizzlies just weren't competing as hard. And that was the theme of the TNT commentary in halftime, was that they didn't appear to be competing. They obviously competed in the second half, but that
I saw Jaws play, and I have no idea what anyone said on television. Yeah. I was busy at the game, but I thought Jaws play in particular was too casual in the first quarter.
Yeah.
I think he started playing in the second quarter, but I thought he was just too casual with the game in the first quarter, and that's something I noted. I posted on whatever social media platform that I had noted in the moment.
Yeah, there are a lot of loose balls. There was a loose ball that both Santi and Pippen had a shot at, and I don't know which, whatever. I mean, it was just like there was a lot of that sort of stuff. It didn't feel like there was as much in the second half. And I don't know, what was Isolo's affect after this one?
He seemed a little more, I would say, perturbed. It was not a Raven angry coach after a game kind of thing, you know. But he was a little more. He seemed a little more on edge than he has been before. And you know, this is still only a handful of a few handfuls of media availabilities we've had with him. I mean, they were trying to get out of there quick. They flew back last night, and they were like ready to get on the plane and go. So the postgame stuff was a little more rushed, which is good for me because I don't want to. I'd rather stick. I mean, I have to stand around and wait for someone to say something that's not interesting. I'd rather stand around for 20 minutes than stand around for an hour.
Right.
So that was good. But Isolo was. I felt a little bit more perturbed about it, and to me that seemed like a situation where that was a game that you could imagine yourself winning, right? You couldn't have imagined yourself winning game one. That was a game last night where it's like, okay, if A and B and C, maybe we get a chance, you know, which is a lot. But game one, it was like you need the whole alphabet, you know? It was just so overwhelming, you're just sort of like, whatever. That was one where, you know, it's an 8-point, 9-point game, like, late in the third, and it's only a 12-point game going into the fourth, and you look back and, like, you start 0 for 10 from the floor on good shots, and, you know, you can, as a coach, you look at that game and say, like, we had done just two or three things better, we could have pulled this out, and that just didn't happen.
Beyond hitting some of your first 10 shots, even two of them, which obviously they were trying to do, right? Whatever. What else?
I mean, if they had gone 4 for 10 on those good shots instead of 0 for 10, like, they probably still lose the game, but we're in a more interesting game with 6 minutes to go, you know?
Jaren had a much better performance. Obviously got the three early fouls, but ended up with three fouls, and much better from Jaren. Thoughts?
Yeah, no, I thought Jaren was generally good in the context of that game. It was proof, and there's no guarantee. Who knows what will happen the next game? You could score 0 points the next game. I don't know, but it was a reminder that, and Isolo had talked about this before the game. He kept getting asked about Jaren, about how, you know, Jaren's a mismatch for other teams, and certainly did look like that in game one. But game two was a reminder of that. Like, they put a big dude on him in Hartenstein, and he cooked him. He outquicked him and got past him and got shots off. And they put smaller guys on him and Caruso. These are both great defensive players of very different kinds, and Jaren used his size to get shots off over him, and that's what we saw the whole first half of the season. That's what we saw like all last year, even though the team was terrible, is that Jaren can score. He's become a versatile scorer and get shots off against all kinds of different defenders, and against this OKC team, like, he probably is their best, you know, like, scoring option in terms of throwing a ball to a guy and getting a bucket, because their perimeter defense is so overwhelming, and Ja is not, for whatever reason, he's not peaked Ja athletically right now. He doesn't seem that way. He's not playing that way. But, like, Jaren is their best option to try to get a decent shot, and that's the way they treated him in that game, and he responded, I think, pretty well. I would say he had a great game, but he certainly, I think, was probably the best Grizzly in the game.
You did have a line in the column that sort of echoed what you just said about Ja, is that he didn't look exceptionally athletic in that game, or it's and is that, do we think that's Ja? Do we think it's the competition? Why do you think the Ja looks?
There's at least three different things that could be the answer or part of the answer. One is that dude had a bad ankle turn like a week ago. That he's been playing. We've sort of forgotten about this because he's not talking about like the injections or whatever anymore. But like, he had an ankle turn a week ago that in the regular season he wouldn't be playing at all. And I think that's pretty clear. That's probably the number one thing. He also, like, this is late in a season where he's had 12 different injuries. And that's the thing we've been talking about all year. Then you throw in the fact that he's been guarded by Lou Dort and Kasan Wallace and all these guys, and like the best perimeter defensive team in basketball. It's probably the compound effect of all of those things. But whatever it is, or whatever mix of those things it is, the result is that this is not the Ja who was exploding all over the Warriors and the Wolves and the Jazz in earlier playoff series.
So they come back. I don't know. Do you expect any aspect of the rotation that intrigues you, or opportunities to change, or whatever? What do you make of the way they?
I don't. I think, you know, the main change they made, the two main changes they seemed to make going into the last game, last night's game, was they put Kennard in the rotation. That was an obvious change.
Right.
And I think they put more effort into getting Jaren more touches in better spots, which is we talked about before the game, and I think they did that. I think they put an emphasis on that. I think both those things ended up working out pretty well. Like, the Kennard thing was frustrating because he just can't – he's supposed to be a three-point shooter, and he can't even get shots up against this team. But I do think some of his ball handling ability to, ability to do something with the ball, I think, was helpful to them. I think that was generally a positive move, playing him versus not playing him. I'm still someone who would give Vince Williams a chance on this. Everyone is out on him. It was maybe me and DeMichael. I was talking to DeMichael Cole about it. He was like, what do you think about this? He was like, they need to play him. And I was like, I agree. Me and you, we're the only ones. I would put him in this game. But mostly it's just about playing better. I don't see any magic adjustment. The magic adjustment is making some shots and playing hard.
So here we are, and this is the second worst. There was the Spurs in whatever the year that was. A Spurs team once upon a time lost to the Lakers in their first two games more convincingly than these two, but that's the only other time in NBA history. And so you look at all of this and you think, my God, the gulf between the Grizzlies. I mean, that's fundamentally,
I don't care about the game one scoring margin.
Okay. That's fine.
The game you saw last night.
Right, is the game. Okay.
Is the gulf. And that gulf is pretty big.
Yeah. So the gulf is, it just feels like you are not, you're not on the same tier as them. So the temptation is, certainly in the fan base, and I don't know in the front office or in the ownership level, is to say, my God, this thing isn't working. We have to make dramatic changes because look at this. We aren't even on the same level as this team. We're getting embarrassed in the playoffs. I don't know. How do you, and we'll have a whole off season to talk about that coming soon, by the way. What do you make of do you think if they were playing another series, it would be dramatically different? And it's because it's Oklahoma City, and I don't know. Thoughts on this muddle of a question?
It's a combination of who they're playing and how diminished they are relative to what they could be in terms of the Clark injury, the Wells injury. I mean, none of this matters against Oklahoma City ultimately in terms of winning or losing.
Right.
But the Clark injury, the Wells injury, the Morant banged up, just the stuff that's happened over the course of the season where you have a coaching change and things are falling apart and you try to get it back together. All of this. I mean, that is extra beyond the roster talent. It's a combination of those two things, I think. I mean, when you get into the ultimate questions, and we can get to that when we get to that, when these conversations happen, particularly on in talking-oriented versus writing-oriented communications, it starts with the conclusion. And to me, I don't start with the conclusion. I start with questions that get you to a conclusion. And so it's like you don't start with should you blow it up or not blow it up. What if you wanted to trade certain players, what could you get
100%.
Back? What are you, what is your threshold for what you deem worth? At what threshold do you want to not keep a core together, right? Is it, people say, does this seem good enough? Answer to that has to be another question. To do what? Those are the things you have to look at. And we'll get into that. But I don't jump to the conclusion of, oh my God, you've lost these two games by combined whatever points, you have to blow the whole thing up.
Right.
Now, I may work through other questions to get to that answer, but I don't start with that answer.
Yeah. Well, so to that point, I have always found the got to trade one of your pieces to be. I said that earlier in the show in the first hour. I said that for what? I remember literally three summers ago, Mark Giannotto would say they have to make a big move. And I'd like, what's the move? I do think this, Chris, is that the once upon a time, I think we had a belief, or I had a belief, that those three players together, we lost Chris, and so we'll restate it. I had this belief that once upon a time, the three players together are good enough, as long as they're healthy, to be elite. So, Chris, what I was going to say is throughout all of this, I have had this belief for several years that if you have the three players together, the big three together, they are good enough to, I don't know whether to win a title or to get to the finals or to get to a Western Conference finals, but they could be, those three players, because of the way they fit together, because you got three of them, that they could be elite. And does this...
My threshold...
Does
and
this make
is
you...
Not
go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
My threshold has always been, and this is not something an NBA GM can say out loud. I don't even know if they believe it. Whatever. Believe whatever you want. This is me. My threshold is, can your team be a competitive playoff team? That means, can they win 50-plus games in the regular season, and can they have a decent chance to advance in the playoffs? That is my threshold. If I don't think I can meet that threshold, I got to change things. If I do think I can meet that threshold, I might still change things if I think the changes can make it a little bit better or whatever, but I'm not looking to, like, start over again if I still have that in front of me.
Yeah, and that's slightly different than elite. Competitive playoff team is different. Is it... And of course, here's the truth, is that those same players, now that they will be more expensive, it's a different equation than when they were less expensive, right? They could be you might conclude that they could be a competitive playoff team with the players around them that you could afford that you can no longer afford, right? I mean, this calculus changes every year.
No, that's right. And so you look at the totality of it. You know, can you put a team on the floor that can do a certain thing? And even if the answer is yes, like, that doesn't mean, like, you know, there are different kinds of trades, right? Like, you know, and the blow it up idea is particularly difficult when you have three guys who are big contracts all in their prime. It's not like you're Milwaukee with Giannis and you've run its course and now it's like, you know, you've reached the start over point. Like, you could choose a start over point with this roster, but, like, you could also choose a lateral point. You could keep it all together and tweak it, which I think is probably what I would recommend, but we'll see. You could blow it up, or you could say, like, let's shake it up, right? Like, trade one of the three guys for a trade that brings back current talent and not just draft picks would be a shake-it-up trade. There are all kinds of different paths you could go.
We also don't know what's going to happen with the front office or the coaching staff. One of the things about the coaching staff is I've always thought that the most important thing to emerge during this whether Isolo will be retained or not, ultimately is his relationship with the big three. That's the most important part here. Does he have an effective relationship with him? Do they believe in him? And does it appear that he can get the most out of them? I do wonder if going through something that is this sort of, you know, discouraging, and I don't know, maybe they're not discouraged, but it feels discouraging to watch, if that could change or have an impact on those relationships and on their belief in each other.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the series is not over, and it might be over in two more games, but, like, two more games would be half a series.
Right.
And so we have a lot more information to take in. And, you know, game one was as bad as a game could possibly be. Game two was a lot better, still not good, but a lot better. And so what's the trend line when you're going back to Memphis, right? Is the trend line still in the right direction, even if you come up short, or is it a team that just sort of lets go and, like, you know, it gets ugly? We have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow night. And I think that is going to have bearing on this.
All right. Are you driving back? You don't sound like you're in the car yet.
No, I'm at a coffee shop here in Oklahoma City trying to decide whether I'm going to try to write something. I'm fiddling with something, but I don't know if I have the energy to really do it. So I need to make that decision in the very, very, very near future.
All right. Well, thank you, Chris. I'll let you get to it. Appreciate it.
All right.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. Jeffrey, what would your... Chris says his standard would be, can this team be a competitive playoff team?
And I subscribe to his standard.
That is your standard?
Because I one thing that does annoy me about the NBA is we decide if you are not the elite title contender, blow it up. And my contention is you should be good, and you don't ever know how things fall.
Well, it's a little bit like that. The problem is, of course, twofold here, is that there's no question that people are happy to be a competitive playoff team the first time they're a competitive playoff team.
Sure.
Right? Year one, year two, maybe year three. And then there is a trajectory. Were you at the end of the Grizzlies core four when they were barely a competitive playoff team, right? You knew they weren't going to do great things anymore.
Yeah.
It felt like they were hanging on.
Yeah.
But they were still a playoff team. And they took that till the end, the dregs, right? They took that to the end. Were you...
You had to move on.
Keep this together until the very end.
Though. No, I
wanted them to move on sooner.
I even wrote that, yes, it was time.
So they're a competitive playoff team, or you thought they were no longer competitive.
I didn't think they were competitive.
They were a playoff team.
Correct.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. Right now, let's assume the Grizzlies make essentially no changes next year.
All right.
Okay? But assume relative good health, okay? But essentially no changes. So you got the same starters back, and you got Jalen, and you got Edie, and whatever. Basically,
Kennard's going to be gone.
They are what they are. Well, let's forget it. Is this a competitive playoff team?
My gut says no. This is where, I wish they would have just avoided this matchup.
Well, that's the thing. I think they are right now.
But if you look at what they did against the teams that are in front of them, they got beat all year.
The argument against it is that all year long they lost to these teams, so they're not a competitive playoff team.
Right.
Of course, and so that is the fundamental question. There's two questions. One is, do you believe that with Ja, Jaren, and Dez in good health, and Brandon's back, and Jalen's back, and you can't assume perfect health, but whatever.
Sure.
And again, I'm not saying that team would beat the Thunder,
yeah.
But I'm saying, would that be a competitive playoff team? So that's the first question. You have to decide if you think it would be or not. And the arguments there are, yeah, sure, they won 48 games, and with better health, they could have won 52 and whatever else, and if they had the right matchup, they'd be in competitive playoff right now. The argument against it is, they lost those teams all year long. But then even if you decided they are a competitive playoff team, not a team that's really much of a threat to go to the Western Conference Finals, depending on how things break, but a competitive playoff team, is that good enough? Are they a competitive playoff team, and is that good enough?
So a competitive playoff team would be good enough. I am not convinced that they are good enough to be a competitive playoff team right now. I think my answer on this would be...
Is a competitive playoff team a team that's competitive could win a series?
Yeah.
Could win a series.
Yeah.
I think they could win a series. Even this team could win a series. Good health, whatever else. I wouldn't necessarily predict
it. Let's go through. Who could they beat?
I think they could beat any of the teams except for the Oklahoma City. Could. I wouldn't necessarily predict it. I mean, hell, they won the season series against Minnesota. They could beat Minnesota.
Yeah, but I mean that part of the Minnesota thing is Brandon Clark has just been a bad matchup for them. And you don't have him.
No. I'm saying with good health. I'm assuming trying to project for next year to decide if I'm going to keep this team together, if it will be a competitive playoff team. And so I'm assuming. No, I don't necessarily think once they lost Jalen Wells and Brandon Clark, I'm not sure they're a competitive playoff team against anybody. And again, I'm not blaming what's happening in Oklahoma City on their absence, But yes, I think that it is and particularly if we're looking forward, another year of better Jalen Wells and Zach Edey makes it more apt to be a competitive playoff team. So I think they are but barely, barely. And that's, to me, the great disappointment here is I once thought that Jaren, Dez, and Ja together would be sort of automatically whoever you put around them, basically, and they're not. That's
well,
very
I think
clear.
The biggest problem, and I don't know if there's a solution to this. Maybe it's a water and oil thing. I don't think that in year six we would think that Ja and Jaren offensively wouldn't pair as well.
I think that's part of the problem. I think that is part of the problem. And then, of course, say assuming good health, you're much safer to assume poor health.
Yes.
Particularly, and A, in the NBA generally, but with these players in specific, you're much apt.
Well, it's really just one.
So then the next question is that. Okay, so first you have to decide, do you think this could be a competitive playoff team? Basically as is, with tinkering. And I fundamentally do. But if you decide no, then the question is can you get there from here with modest tinkering or not? Without, in other words, sometimes in order to get to that competitive playoff team, you just have to make the right draft pick or the right trade or whatever else. You pick one of your three stars and pick up, you know, whatever else.
Sure.
But then the only other way, sometimes you get to the point, as you finally did with the core four, is the only way to get to have a competitive playoff team again is to let Tony walk, to let Zeebo walk, and to trademark,
tear it down.
And that's the only way back to getting to be a competitive playoff team is a teardown. I don't believe, and we'll see, like, who knows what will happen over the next two games, who will want out, if will anyone want out, will they be committed to the cause, what will happen? Is there a way to make this a competitive team without that? And I tend to think there is, if everyone's still
on board. I think the key difference, though, for me is, like, at the end of the core four, age was a real problem.
That's exactly right.
That's not this.
No. Then you sort of had to. You realized you could still imagine a better Ja because you can imagine a healthier Ja.
I mean, honestly, as bad and demoralizing as this has been to watch, I've kind of found myself feeling a little better about Ja coming out of these two games, as bad as it's been. Now, some of the casual turnover stuff, like that was the other thing that was frustrating about last night is even when they fought their way kind of back into the game when it got down to like eight.
Yeah.
They're just throwing the ball into the stands. Yeah. And it's like there's no sense of urgency. There's no like sense of the moment. But I have thought Ja's played pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, plus he is, like, again, we don't hear about the injury, but he didn't get magically 100%,
no.
Right? So I think that's true. It will be because of the Chris points out, Chris is always, well, they got two games to play. I don't believe what we're going to see in the next two games is going to be fundamentally different than what we saw last night. But maybe.
I mean, maybe. You could talk me into, it looks like last night and the...
Only they lose by four.
The Thunder don't shoot quite as well, and the Grizzlies don't shoot quite as poorly. And so then you have a more interesting loss.
Well, I mean, the problem, of course, is that Shea has shot 32.6%.
No, I mean, that is actually the most disheartening thing, is the fact that, like...
29.
I'm not saying, like, he's been a zero, but there are stretches of the games that you don't even notice he's out there.
So, I mean, I don't, I'll be honest, I don't completely rule out the possibility. If the Grizzlies hit a bunch of threes, inspired performance, they could win a game.
No, I mean, if you can have like the Heat last year against Boston.
Yes, I wouldn't predict. Yeah, exactly right. Heat right. Against Boston. What the hell just happened? What did we just watch? And so that could happen. I do believe that after this, there will be a tendency to overreact. I don't know if it'll be an internal tendency, and maybe you're right. Maybe this will just be bracing enough that people will properly react internally. But I think the fan base may be at a point that they need seismic changes, where I'm not sure that is the best course for them to be competitive in the playoff team.
Seismic, I agree. I am fundamentally opposed to just running it back and hoping you get better.
Well, so no one, I don't think, would say run it back. Anyone. But what if they say run it back and added some pieces, you know, add a, you know, Dorian Finney-Smith level player?
Right.
Is that running it back?
No, to me that's not.
I think that...
That's a shakeup.
Yeah, there's no chance they will... Even at the trade deadline, I don't believe that was what their desired job was to do. I think they wanted to add better pieces. You don't get any credit for that, and they shouldn't get credit for that, right? But I literally don't think anyone is saying, this is the group, let's run it back. I think everyone would acknowledge we need some better pieces around them. Now,
yeah.
It may not be they may not, it may be hard to do it, hard to get those pieces.
It becomes an execution test.
Because an execution test, and the execution has gotten harder, not easier. And they failed to do it when it was easier. All right, we got Sam Hardiman coming up next on the Jeff Cochran Show. We'll take a break from this Grizz talk to talk about the city a little bit. We'll do that next. Jeff Cochran Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Cochran Show, joined now by Sam Hardiman. He covers the city for the Daily Memphian on Twitter or X at Sam Hardiman. Happy English Muffin Day, Sam. How are you?
I'm well. I didn't know it was English Muffin Day. Maybe I'll have one.
How do you feel about the English Muffin? We think it's underrated.
Yeah, certainly underrated. I love an English muffin sandwich, to be quite honest with you.
That's the highest form of
English
muffin.
And they're also good with jam.
Yeah, weirdly enough, like you think of them, jam or butter or whatever, and that's probably how they did it in the old days. But right now, you know, anything, like, you know what is a burger on an English muffin's good? A tuna fish on an English muffin, if you like tuna fish, some don't, is really good. Jeffrey's about to weigh in.
Leftover steak.
Leftover
slice
steak on a slice
on
this muffin, it's better than a biscuit. In terms of, it holds together. Or I'll tell you what, the biscuit gets so much more ballyhooed than the English muffin, and I think you can make at least an argument that the English muffin's on the same tier.
I would agree with that. It definitely holds together. Like, I'm big on eating with my hands. Like, anytime I can not use your utensils, I will.
Uh-huh.
Like constantly. Like when my wife is okay, you're cooking, she knows that we will not be, or she may be using a fork, but she knows I will not be using a fork.
Well, what's the most controversial thing that you eat with your hands that other people would eat with a fork?
I'm not going to answer that on radio.
I mean, you're not eating spaghetti with your hands, I take it. You know,
No, I'm not doing that. That's animal behavior, though, like, you know, in the middle of the night, it's happened. I'll say that.
All right. We don't have a lot to talk about because all kinds of reasons. But so I want to ask you about some sports things first. First of all, you're the only person who comes on this show that I can really talk hockey with. Although Jeffrey watches a surprising amount of hockey, honestly.
Especially
playoff hockey. What have you thought so far?
I texted you the other day about this. I've been a Bruins fan my whole life. Been, you know, obviously the Bruins have been in the playoffs almost my whole life. Or my whole watching existence. Anyway, it's been really refreshing for them not to be in the playoffs because, like, the emotional exhaustion that I would feel after playoff games is no longer there, so I can watch other playoff games and not just feel triggered by it. Like I have to get up for it. And so I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the other night, the Capitals, Habs, the Canadiens, for those who don't know what the Habs are. You know, Alex Ovechkin doing what Alex Ovechkin does best. I mean, just the way he uses screens to, you know, shoot, like, his overtime winner was just so clever and crafty. It was awesome. You know, it seems like the Leafs, like, as you texted me last night, they might get the monkey off their back, which, like, I don't actually, like it's kind of like the Bills for me. Like, the Leafs fit in this category of they've just been so beat up by time.
Right.
Right? That, like, I'm not rooting against them, and I root for their success.
And they have so many fans. If you're just interested in the most people being the happiest, you would want the Leafs to win. Buffalo people tend to hate the Leafs, but anyway, that was fun. That went to OT last night. It wasn't an elegantly played game, but playoff hockey's great. And then secondly, we got the NFL draft this week, and I was thrilled, as you know, not that I wish you personally ill, but that on the last game of the regular season, your Pats, led by the great Joe Milton, defeated my Buffalo Bills in a meaningless game to drop the Pats. Would they have the first pick to now the fourth pick?
They were in control of the first. Yeah, they were in control of the first, yeah.
And so not only do they not have pick number one, which they could have used to trade for a king's ransom, they also, there are two, in Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter, there are two sort of, you know, otherworldly talents in this draft, evidently. And the nice thing is by winning that game, you dropped out of reach of both of them to fourth. It appears. And you're going to settle for Will Campbell, it appears, a short-armed, really a stubby-armed guard tackle from LSU. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I remember we were texting during that game, and you were like, oh, no, they'll be fine. Four is fine. And I'm just like, no.
No, you knew.
Like, I knew at that time. I would hope that they don't do Will Campbell. Like, I really feel bad for, like, people during NFL draft season, like, these prospects. Yeah, they're about to get life-changing money in the first round. Like, I get it. Like, don't feel too bad for them. But, like, we're only talking about this man's arms. Like, he will not be a success because his wingspan is not long enough. It's just absolutely absurd, right? Like, we don't talk about anyone else society that way.
You know my new favorite mantra about this draft?
What's your new favorite mantra?
Starters, not stars in this one.
Starters, not stars.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. You'll get a star. Yeah,
I've heard some, like, speculation that, you know, because Mike Vrabel sort of, you know, brought up Daniel Hunter, the edge rusher, you know, Vikings edge rusher, unprompted, that Shamar Stewart, who's, like, an athletic freak out of Texas A&M, might be sneaky here. You know, that would be cool. I mean, you know, maybe Jeffrey's Giants do something stupid at number three and let Abdul Carter get to us.
Don't.
It doesn't feel like that's going
to happen. But, you know, I'm not happy about it. I hope they kind of trade back. But then at the same time, like, you know, I've gone through the Bill Belichick era, of which, like, they always traded back, and it didn't always work. So, yeah, maybe stubby armed. Maybe Armand Bembou, the Missouri tackle, could happen, which would be nice.
His arms are
like, I was looking this up the other night. There's no Missouri player that's had a really meaningful career for the Patriots, so it would be kind of nice for my alma mater and my favorite team to kind of have, like, a little synergy there.
What Missouri players have had meaningful careers, period?
Well, there's the great Kellen Winslow, not the one in jail, but father.
Yeah, no, he was great.
Yeah.
He was great.
That's he was great. Effect. Jeremy Maclin definitely had a meaningful career. Mitch Morse, the great offensive lineman, he had a meaningful career.
Yeah, I would argue
Chase Daniel had the ideal
career. Ideal, absolutely. Yes, yeah, I would agree with that.
I'll be honest, it's not a very distinguished list. The list of journalists who've had a meaningful career from Mizzou, more impressive than football players who've had a meaningful career from Mizzou. So there you go. Okay, in terms of news, I will point people to, but we won't talk about it because we've beaten to the ground. Your XAI series has come to a conclusion. You did a piece today about the environmental impact of XAI, the pushback, whether people will be able to have an impact on XAI. Is a hearing this Friday?
There's a public hearing this Friday on XAI's request to make 15 natural gas turbines permanent, and I will stop the XAI talk there.
Okay, right there. And I'll urge people to go over to the Daily Memphian and read it. But the thing that I did want to ask you about was the story that came out of City Council yesterday. You didn't write it, but the zoo asked for financial assistance from the city because their attendance and therefore their revenue has fallen off dramatically because of the Eliza Fletcher and Ezekiel Kelly that summer or whenever that was.
That was the fall of 2020.
And that has had a dramatic impact on them and their revenue. What did you make of that?
Yeah. So I was in the newsroom. My great colleague Bill Gaudry discovered this for us yesterday. I was getting edits on the XAM monstrosity that we published this morning, and so that's why I wasn't there. First, I would point out that the zoo's attendance has not been that dramatically fallen off. Given the figures they released to the city council yesterday, it's about 11% drop, and that's real. Like, I'm not saying that's not real. At the same time, like, you know, talking about the broader macro economy here, right? Like, I'm not certain that, you know, a lot of places over, you know, the past couple of years haven't seen declines and are real. And I don't want to belittle anyone's crime concerns, but also something that the comment section, and I'm not one, as many people know, to love the comment section, but the comment section did point out that in this time frame, the zoo also lost some pandas, and pandas are a bit of an attraction, you know? And so that also might have had an effect on attendance, not just the horrific incidents that happened in 2023.
Well, it's obviously, I mean, this is something that whether it's the zoo or whether it's the Grizzlies or whether it's the University of Memphis or whether it's downtown restaurants or whether it's church services or whether it's like there's been a lot of falling off of attendance across the city, and it could be pandemic related. People got out of the habit, even the zoos outside, but still people sort of hold up, right? Their habits sort of changed over this period. As you point out, I mean, it's funny because the economy has generally been good. I think even in Memphis, relatively, the economy has generally been good. But so you've got whatever the hangover is from the pandemic, and then obviously you have crime concerns. I imagine this is not a uncommon complaint, but it's also not exactly 100% clear what drives all of this. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. And to be clear, like, I don't want to belittle anyone's concerns about crime.
No.
They are really quite real. And
clearly part
and,
of it. Yes.
You know, I meet people all the time, you know, particularly on the golf course, who are like shocked that I live in downtown Memphis. And they're like, you live there? And I'm like, yeah, well, it's actually really nice and really safe, relatively. It's got its drawbacks like every place. But like, there is a real perception issue that Memphis battles. And in part, you know, me and the media talking about the media here, like, we also, you know, if it bleeds, it leads on broadcast news. And that really has an impact on people's perception, because if they just see a push alert or they see one breathless news broadcast at 11 p.m. before they go to bed, they're not going to wake up the next day and then do some research on what's the crime rate in the 38103 zip code or the 38104 zip code where the zoo is, right? They're not doing that. And so, like, it's really about these singular events, like Eliza Fletcher, like Ezekiel Kelly, right, that really do shape perception of places. Even though I lived down the street from where Ezekiel Kelly allegedly did what he did. I was on the scene that night. I showed up not too long after one of the victims was shot and saw them get put in an ambulance. Like, I was there, okay, working the news. I was at the commercial appeal at the time. And, you know, that street, McLean, is very safe almost all the time. But it's going to, that event happening there is going to shape perception of those who don't live there for a really long time, for a really enduring time. We've seen that in the city's history when it comes to, you know, MLK being assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee, right?
Yeah, and not only, it's a little bit like, you know, oh, the music's already playing. If you've got a coach and he has a reputation for blowing in the last 2 minutes or something, right? And then goes 5 years without, but then he does again, you immediately go back to that. Like, ah, it's a damn coach. And it's a little bit the same thing with crime. Like, one thing happens and it reminds us of everything else that has always happened. Sam, you're nice to join us. Thanks very much. Appreciate it. We have an English muffin.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, bye. Sam Hardiman. I would urge you to be in attendance at Oak Hall sometime this week. That'll lift your spirits. It's beautiful out there. It's springtime, and it is time to get to Oak Hall. We are lucky to have such a legendary clothing store. It has totally transformed the way that when I want to look good, the way that I dress. You walk on in there right now and you see the Peter Millar, the Brax slacks. I mean, the place is absolutely loaded with beautiful clothes for spring and summer. And the people are, I can't even begin to describe how helpful they are. It's the best shopping experience that I've consistently ever had in my life. So make some time this week to get yourself to Oak Hall. Jeffrey, what's coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next. Jason and John, the guys will have Coach Hurd with him. Make sure you're tuned right in to 92.9 FM ESPN.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow. For now, work is done.